Juan Felipe Herrera is the first Latino to ever hold the position of the United States Poet Laureate. He's the author of well over 25 books, including poetry, children's books, young adult, novels and verse, nonfiction. And his accolades are too numerous to mention here, but he's won pretty much every kind of literary award imaginable, from the National Book Critics Circle Award to the Pura Bulpre Prize, the American Book Award, you name it, he's pretty much won it. He's been a professor for, well over, I think, two, three decades maybe. And he's now retired, though, and living in his hometown of Fresno, where he writes and works from. And we're fortunate to have him as the only five-time guest, I believe, on this show.
Five, I believe.
Right.
Or so, six. Could be six, ten.
Could be ten,
with
yeah.
Juan, who knows?
Juan Felipe Herrera, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a great pleasure and privilege to be on your show. I love this. Thank you.
Well, I think this is the sixth time you've been on the show, but this is, of course, the first time you've been on the show as the U.S. Poet Laureate.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Sixth time.
That.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you. But, you know, this is really all about you guys. You know, it's all about everybody being the Poet Laureate of the United States. It's really all about everyone more than about me. So thank you so much. And, of course, it's what you guys do and have always done. So I appreciate being here with you all.
That's funny that you would say that it's about us, you being Poet Laureate, because I remember when we first heard the announcement, we, of course, now speaking for the community, it was about us. We were very excited.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm not talking about the Chicano community, the Latino community. I'm talking about the poetry community. It was like, yeah. Wow, one of us is representing poetry in the United States.
I mean,
States.
It felt that way, too, even back in 2012 when you were the selected as the Poet Laureate for California, the state of California, the first Latino Poet Laureate to serve in that position. I remember the poet Francisco Alarcón telling me this in Albuquerque, you know, I think the chances are good for Juan Felipe. and they were, and it felt like all of us were excited. And now, even now, on this sort of national level also. So, Juan, you know, I know that since you were even back when you were the California, I mean, gosh, you've been on the road since 2012 nonstop. Daniel, I don't know if I told you this, but I saw Juan Felipe like a glimmer in San Antonio. There's Juan. He just walked in the door, and all of a sudden, 2 hours later, after 1,000 photographs and handshakes later, and kissing babies later, he was like out the door, and we just really got to say so long. It was like such a, and you've been like, it's been like that since 2012, but. One of the things, Juan Felipe, I know that you've been doing is, when all these sort of social issues, I mean, you've been doing this for years now, but, more recently, things are happening like, sort of the gun violence and also, just the things happening, sort of immigration, all these things are emerging constantly every day. And I see on your Facebook page, you always offer at least a few words, poetic words or, poetic blessings, towards some of these things. But there are so many, I can't imagine that there are probably a lot that just sort of fall off the plate because, there are too many to catch. I wonder how do you decide what to choose to address or what to choose to sort of, offer some words for?
Well, it's like breathing, like you yourself, Tim and Danny, you guys do the same things. You all have been writing, and you write so many different ways, and you address so many different things that come up, either in long-range writing pieces or in, immediate pieces. So it's like that, some things you just can't. Some things come at you like Buster Douglas, and there's just no way to, run around and try to hip-hop yourself around it. It's like the shootings in San Bernardino, recently. Yeah, I used to live, we've all passed through there, and I used to live in Redlands, going to work at UC Riverside, the Department of Creative Writing, really good people there, and I know that little area, that's where people go shopping, and there's Costco, and my brother-in-law, Louis Robles, works like across the street, literally.
Wow.
So, at first I said, well, I can't really force myself to write it. And I didn't really have, I wanted to do it, but the writing moment wasn't opening up for me. So I had to wait. I had to wait a little bit until George, I think it's George Lozano, is that right?
I don't know.
Who, the detective who came, the one who said, I'll take a bullet for you.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. And he helped pull the people that were kind of frozen in action, because something like that, you kind of, you kind of just stay frozen. I mean, what are you going to do?
Right.
You don't know if you can make it out or shall you stay in. So he says, I'll take a bullet for you. And then they moved and they followed him out. So I said, oh, yes. That's where I can start the poem. I'll take a bullet for you. I'll start it there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I wrote that one. And so that was like a, it just hit me in the face, and I just needed to do that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, and we can all do that, you know. It's not like you need, you don't need anything. All you need is to be alive and to move your hand across a page or just sing it out.
You know,
and whatever comes out is going to be good. It's going to be good for the people.
A few years back when Philip Levine was Poet Laureate of the United States, we had him on the show. And, and you know, Philip Levine could be very grumpy, cantankerous, you know, I mean, he was very funny. It was part of his personality, you know, where he would like try to be pessimistic and grumpy. And, I asked him, I says, you know, now that you're a Poet Laureate of the United States, what do you plan on doing? And he goes, absolutely nothing. And I don't know if he meant it, but it's very Philip Levine like. And I kind of want to ask you the same question. What do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish as Poet Laureate of the United States? Absolutely everything.
Absolutely everything. Everything.
Yeah. I want to accomplish everything, you know. most of all, you know, I really want to invite people. You know, every day changes, and every day everything changes. And so every day I want more people to express themselves, you know, to become present, to become public, living human being figures.
Yeah.
You know, we're human beings, but if we do not express ourselves, we're incomplete. It's just like a cheetah. If a cheetah does not run, it's an incomplete cheetah. It has to run full speed and almost literally fly, and then it's a cheetah. Mm-hmm. But for us to be human beings, we have to express ourselves. And to be complete human beings, we have to express ourselves in the public flow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a tree cannot grow if it doesn't grow in the open air. It can grow inside. But for it to be a real, full, beautiful, blossoming tree, it has to blossom under the sun and through the earth. It has to do that to be a full tree. So for us to be complete human beings, we have to express ourselves at the highest levels, at the deepest levels, and the public environment.
Mm-hmm.
In the public environment where there's people. So I want to invite everyone to express themselves fully. And the website we put together at the Library of Congress called Casa de Colores, House of Colors.
Right.
And it's for all voices and for all colors and all languages. For example, if you chimed in right now at the Library of Congress, you look it up, and you go to the literature department, it's a little tab to the right, you press it, and you start getting into Casa de Colores. You could respond to the question about peace. The theme right now is about peace. And if you have something to say about that, or you want peace, or you don't want it, or you want it in a particular way, whatever your feeling and expression is as a human being, you can say it in your own words, and your own language, and your own style, and the entire nation will read your poem. And the entire world will have access to your poem. You don't have to get 99 degrees and 42 workshops. You could just fall right in.
Beautiful.
That's my goal.
No letters of rejection on that one.
Exactly.
There's no letters of rejection. There's only pozole. That's all there is.
Nice.
Pozole. And Chico's Tacos forever. and Roberto's and Las Cruces, by the way. And the free New York pizza. If you make it to New York, feel free to get some New York pizza. And if you hit Seattle, you know, go see Lauro Flores. He doesn't know this, but go see Lauro Flores and ask him to fry you up a giant fillet of beautiful copperhead salmon. And if you don't like salmon, then just have a nice big bowl of fresh spinach, okay?
Yep.
Con cilantro, of course.
Con cilantro. That's right.
Con cilantro.
I know, Juan, you know, you've done a lot of work with youth, and there's one image that sticks in my mind. I'll never forget this. And this was like, I want to say back in the mid-90s, but, you know, when you first came out, with your children's book, was it Canto de las Palomas? Is that the title?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
The
and then,
90s, yeah.
Right, right. And so I remember at Arte Americas, this cultural center there in Fresno, California, you were there, you walked into the room, I was there waiting for you with my children, and there were like 100 screaming children in there with their parents, and they're all like just swirling swirling around and taking over the exhibit hall and everything. And then they're waiting for you to come to enter so that you could read. And then they were screaming and going crazy. And you walked in and you, like, in a matter of, I mean, a few minutes with still you had your mochila, your satchel hanging from you. And in a matter of like a few seconds, you had them at rapt attention. You could hear a pin drop. Then you had them all doing teatro, all laughing, all play. It was like magic. And I'll never forget that. And I always thought to myself, you know, one day I'll aspire to have that kind of mastery, you know, which is like, but, you know, as a poet and as a community minded, you know, person, activist, and as an artist, teacher, you know, why is working with children and their parents, because I know the families are what's important to you. Why is that so important in this, you know, in what you're doing?
Working with children and parents. Well, you know, that was always because it's beautiful, you know, because parents and children usually don't have giant libraries. And our communities, we don't have all the books. We're getting more books every day, and there's iPads, of course, coming in. But, you know, our homes, which are the root of society, our families, which are the root of society, and our children, which are the root of society, you know, deserve open resources. And most of all, so that's kind of on a conceptual level, activist level. At a personal level, I just love meeting families, and I love talking to elders, and I love talking to children and hearing what they got to say. They're the new little geniuses. They're the new little geniuses. You ask them about something, you go, well, I never would have thought of it like that. Jeez. So I just love human beings, and it's a good thing. And then I ask them to come up front, and I say, why don't you tell us a little about, you know, what's going on at school? And then, you know, they just come up and, you know, tell you. And when we're doing the anti-bullying campaign, the I Promise Joanna in Riverside, the I Promise Joanna campaign, the children from from one of the elementary schools in Moreno Valley, I had them in the audience, and we were talking about what are we going to do, you know, to stop bullying in our schools. And I invited some of them up. Then I said, okay, well, thanks for coming up. Introduce yourselves. And, you know, guess what? Why don't you guys form a little group right now, break into groups of three. I had six of them. And, you know, talk among yourselves while I say a few things to the audience and come up with some ideas for what you can do in school on bullying. And then I turned to the audience maybe for no more than 3 minutes. Then I turned back and say, okay, well, what are your thoughts? And they had these big old thoughts.
Wow.
They had these big ideas for these big clubs, bullying clubs and circus things and a circus show on bullying. I mean, they so that's why I also like to hang out with them. And then we always said that, you know, in the civil rights movement in 67 when I jumped into it at UCLA and the Chicano movement and all the movements, really, all the social movements that were going on. We were all, and as we are now, interested in addressing the needs of our communities. So we, as you know, so we built little schools. We put little escuelitas together in little storefronts or in little community centers, and Chunky Sanchez in San Diego taught guitar, and Victor Ochoa taught murals, and Guillermo Aranda and Antonia Perez and Yolanda Lopez, and they taught clay making, you know, making ceramics and firing them up. So, you know, that's part of what we have done when we started and gained a lot of inspiration from the civil rights movement, you know, because it's equality and it's creativity.
We're talking to Juan Felipe Herrera, the current Poet Laureate of the United States. Before you were even Poet Laureate of California, you were active. You did so much with the community, and you came to El Paso one time. We had you over here for a reading, and you visited classrooms and everybody. It was just such a great time. And I know you do that a lot, but ever since you were Poet Laureate of California, it must have increased. And now that you're Poet Laureate of the United States, I imagine you are, like Tim said, you're going all over the place. And I kind of want to switch this question now to you as a writer, you as a poet. With all this stuff that you're having to do you find that it's contributing or impeding your ability to write poetry or your, even your time?
Good question.
Well, yes, it's eating up all my time, and it chewed up my old style of doing things. That person and that way of life does not exist anymore. So I've had to find new ways of writing and new places to write and new moments to write. I write a lot in airports, like Tim, And I ride in airplanes like Tim and like Danny Chacon. Yeah. And you know those guys, you know, they ride in airplanes and they ride in airports and they squibble as they move along through hotels and restaurants. So that's what I do. You know, that's where I do the writing. And I'll crunch out a whole book in a notebook, but it's all scribbled out. You know, mm-hmm. But then I don't really have all the time to come back and type it up. So then I write just poem per poem. When you know these things happen that shock all of us, and I'll get back to those big collections sooner or later.
Right.
So it's I'm in an interview world. I'm in a traveling world, and I'm in a meeting people world. And as I meet them, you know, I give them everything I can. And, you know, it's a little bit of everything. You know, when I go to a reading, for example, at the Poetry Foundation not too long ago, I'll have students, in this case, Chicana, Latina students, MFA students. They just got out of the MFA and they got their manuscripts and they, well, what do I do with it? So they come up to me and they go, what do I do with it? So I give little writing, you know, in a sense, little writing workshops at my readings after the signing takes place. You know, usually you read and then you sign, but when you're signing, you're talking to people, signing your books for others, autographing.
Right.
But, you know, then there's an extra layer now where people, especially Latinas and Latinos, they want feedback on their manuscripts or on their writing.
Right. Wow. Yeah.
Like that, or they bring their children and they say, I want you to meet Juan Felipe Herrera, this is my child, I want you to meet a writer. So then we do that too.
Yeah.
So that takes place, you know. So that kind of doesn't replace, but that's a new branch on my writer life that I didn't have before.
And I heard about this really beautiful, touching story about when you went to Washington, D.C. to read there at the Library of Congress for, you know, your sort of inaugural reading as a poet laureate of the United States. And that you took your third grade teacher, who I believe her name was Mrs. Sampson. Tell us about why it was important for you to have her there and tell us about that moment, for what that meant for her?
Well, you know, this is a big, talk about a circle, you know. This is the circle that was completed September 15th last year. That circle began when I was in third grade, which was 1956, 57. And that was my teacher, Mrs. Lelia. It's like Lela in Spanish, but Lelia Sampson, African-American teacher, who taught us to sing gospel songs in class. Mm. And then one day she asked me, and it was the beginning of my voice life. My mother taught me to read and write and play with words and sing and filled up my imagination and myself with stories.
Right.
So I had that going. But when I hit third grade, Mrs. Sampson said, can you come up and sing? And I go, okay, you know, even though I kind of had been shut down in first grade.
Sure.
And second grade was a kind of a bloody world. my friends would just get slammed, I don't know by whom. Maybe it was the teacher, but they would end up in the cloakroom bleeding on the floor. Mm. And I ended up in the cloakroom. We put our X's on the wall. It was like a little, you know, death row, you know.
Okay. Wow.
And the floor was bloody, and there were X's on the wall. So in third grade, Mrs. Sampson said, I'd like you to come up and sing. Can you come up and sing? I go, look, yeah. I don't know why, but she was so inviting. And I did. I sang Three Blind Mice, you know, Tres Ratones Ciegos. And then when I finished, she said, well, you have a beautiful voice. And I turned around, it was like a big, like open sesame. The mountains opened, even though I didn't understand. I said to my friend, ¿Qué dijo? Que tienes una voz muy beautiful. I go, oh. And I didn't want to accept it, but I kind of did. I couldn't, my body did, you know, but my mind couldn't do it. But I felt it, and I was inspired. So from that moment on, she pushed my writing, poetry, life, expressive button, and it was on forever. It was on forever. So she came. So when people found out about my that I was a U.S. Poet Laureate, All the newspapers in Telemundo, Univision, and LA Times, New York Times were knocking on my door, and I told them about Mrs. Sampson. They were all lined up out here in front of my house in Fresno. They were all around, you know. Right. All the neighbors stuck their head out while they were eating donuts and tacos.
Took selfies in front of your house.
Well, their head stuck out the window. And I told them her story. So then she read it in the San Diego Tribune. And all her friends called her up. Oh, Lelia, you're in the paper, And, you know, one of your students from third grade. And then she called a reporter, and the reporter gave my number, which was actually Margarita's number, my partner, you know, my wife, Margarita. Uh-huh. And then she called me. I was in my little room here, where I am right now. And she goes, Juan Felipe. I go, what? Mrs. Sampson on the phone. I go, who? It's Mrs. Sampson from third grade. Wow. Oh, you got to be kidding. So then that's when we began talking. And then she says, I want to see you before I close my eyes. That's exactly. And then I said, well, you're invited to the inaugural, Mrs. Sampson. Okay. I want to see if I can put it together. And she and her friends and some of her family got it all together and came to the inaugural. And that's when I said to everybody there in the Library of Congress, I said, and my dear teacher who started me on this path, Mrs. Lelia Sampson, is right here in the first row. And everybody gave her a giant standing ovation.
Wow. Beautiful. Wow.
That is a beautiful story.
So that's what happened.
What a great story for her on her end, I'm sure, no doubt, you know.
Yeah, we always, as teachers, I know all of us are teachers. And, to see students go on to do something extraordinary just means so much to us. So I imagine she's a very happy woman. We're running out of time. We're wondering if you would be able to share a poem with us, either something new or whatever you want.
Let me share this poem that we talked about briefly, which a while ago it's called I'll Take a Bullet for You.
Oh, perfect, yeah.
And of course, the phrase comes from Detective Jorge Lozano, who led the people to safety at the Inland Regional Center here in San Bernardino in Southern California after the mass shooting took place there, and the responders came and tried to help people and take care of them. I'll take a bullet for you, Detective Jorge Lozano said. From the chasm of sprinklers spilling and leaving, he walked the living, wounded. He did not utter words. It was his heart that moved. The innocent followed. In the shattered corners, we heard you, even though we were lost in the complex tears of the digital screen. Hope, we had not heard the word. How could it be such an odd, weaving, breathing thing, bitten, we thought, after Paris? Razors and hard wires were rising. I'll take a bullet, you said. We said that too, listening to you. Esperanza, hope, we whispered, picking up our children after school, shuffling dim at the tree farm. We bow as we plant this greenness in the center of our brown house. It seems to touch the sky.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. That was a poem by the current U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera, who we've been talking with about all things poetry, community, art, and culture, and familias also. Juan Felipe, it's always a beautiful time talking with you.
And thanks for joining us again, Juan.
Thanks, Tim, and thanks, Danny. You guys are the best. It's a great show.